12-Sided Stories is for mature audiences and often deals with topics that may be difficult for some listeners. Discretion is advised. Brave the dark woods of folk horror with us in this Vaesen actual play, The Hidden North. Remember, 12-sided stories are always story-heavy, rules-light, and full of fright.
Hello and welcome to The Hidden North, episode number 3. My name is Wes Otis, and this is our Vaesen actual play. Let's go ahead and meet our wonderful players. Let's start with Saint.
Hello, I am Saint, or Saint Spider, and I have been playing Sieve Kask. That's a kind of shaky occultist so far. Hopefully we'll find a little more courage. And she goes by she, her pronouns, as do I.
Hello, everybody. My name is Candace, also known as Candace the Magnificent. My pronouns are they, she, and I am playing Hildegard Brunson, also they, she, your not so friendly doctor.
Hello, everyone. I am Piper. I use they, them pronouns, and I play Elizabeth Purse, who uses she, they pronouns. She is a writer who's a little bit too curious for their own good.
Hey, I am Michelle, and I am playing Greta Nielsen, who, she's just trying to figure out a mystery, and we are both she-her.
Enjoying the show? Then take a moment to join our Patreon. Support the podcast and get early access to episodes and bonus content. Head to 12-Sided Stories Patreon today.
Awesome. This is a great place for a recap. In the last episode, you all had found yourself in what can be best described as a fairy dream nightmarescape. There were 3 locations that you were able to go to. Each one of them seemed to have some strange, archaic puzzle or ritual that needed to be done to be able to get rid of that specific location. There was the cabin. There was a large tree that was the north point of a clock. That particular one had bodies on it. So like the first 1 through 4 was skeletal. 5 through 8 was decomposing. And then the rest were empty. And there was some dark entity behind the tree dressed in a nun's habit, but far from human. Maybe at one point it was human. And it wanted you to lay down. The next one was the cabin where the mother was feeding the baby. The baby was actually draining the mother of life, and she was cooking a stew of dead fairies. And our good doctor fed her those fairies, and by nourishing the patient, the entire thing disappeared. The last one was a brook with a rocky outcropping, and the neck was there. The neck is a fiddle-playing creature that has a song that Elizabeth is really trying to figure out. Elizabeth was able to get one more piece of the song from herself. A younger version of herself was there. You all, after figuring out each of one of these little rituals, were able to wake up and walk out of the forest. And you found yourself in Uppsala, which is not far from Stockholm. You don't remember anything at all from arriving in Uppsala in the first place. You remember your past of like where you grew up and wanting to find the song or, you know, being a doctor and all that stuff. But arriving in the city after receiving a letter asking you to come and be a part of a Vaesen research group called the Society is completely blank from that point up. Like, there's nothing there. You stumbled out of the forest to the backyard of this large castle. The forest dissipates behind you, and this is where we're going to pick it up. You come out of the forest, and you meet an elderly gentleman on the back stoop of this castle that's kind of run down. And he looked up at you and was just like, it didn't work. You weren't able to figure it out. And that's where we ended the last episode. So we're picking it up there. Your disorientation is fading. If that's even a word, you're looking around and you notice the forest you were in is gone. It's melted into the city. It's also extremely loud around you. You hear sounds that you weren't used to hearing when you first arrived in Uppsala. There is the sounds of cars and large trucks going by. There are larger buildings with lots of lights. The entire city looks electrified, and it seems very strange. You look down at your hands, and all of you notice, looking at each other, that you're a lot older than what you were in the dream, maybe even in your 70s or 80s. And the man in front of you, sitting on the step, he looks like he's even older. He's drinking some whiskey. And like I said, he says to you, well, I guess it didn't work. God, I was hoping that this time we'd figure it out.
What are you talking about?
You don't have any memory of anything?
I remember being in the woods, and it seemed like a fairy wood, and it was very strange and terrifying.
You all are trapped in some kind of curse that we're trying to figure out how to break and why. Every time we think we get close, unfortunately, you're killed. And then years and years and years later, you show up here. It's happened twice before. So...
Only twice?
Only twice.
Some far more bodies than that.
What do you mean, more bodies?
There was a fairy circle, and quite a few bodies belonging to us were littered about the circle.
Yeah, my recollection, it's only been twice.
Are we in the same clothes that we were in when we were in the woods?
Yes, you are. And the chicken is with you.
Is the chicken old?
No, chicken looks fine.
Has the chicken come through with us before?
Yeah, Steve is always bringing that damn thing back with her.
Well, at least I'm consistent. I go and I'm trying to pet the chicken, if it lets me.
Sure.
I guess we should name it.
Elizabeth kind of looks around to everyone, seeing kind of the aged up versions of everybody, and says, so, worrying question. Because of all the years that have gone by, we're much older now, right?
Yeah, First off, I'm Algot Frisk. I am the butler of the castle here. And to answer your question, it's been 75 years since you were killed.
Oh.
Every time you're murdered, it seems to be a larger amount of time that goes by from that point to when you show up. It's actually 1955 right now. You're in the far future.
Oh, heavens. Okay, no wonder it's so noisy out. Maybe we could take this inside. It's a bit overwhelming out here, I won't lie.
I would like to do that, but I can't go with you inside. Once you go inside, you're going to be sent back to your present, and the cycle starts all over again.
Okay, so it's getting the discussions out here. Okay, all right.
I know we can't go inside yet, but is there a way we could get a needle and thread before we go inside?
I mean, I could fetch you one, sure.
Please.
He gets up and he goes into the castle and disappears for maybe 10 minutes. He's exceedingly old at this point, so moving through a huge castle is going to take some time.
Greta, what time is it to be doing mending before we are meeting our certain doom? I feel like your priorities are maybe, you know.
Hildegard, when we showed up in the fairy realm, what was the only thing we had with us?
We had quite a lot of nothing.
We had our clothing. Maybe if we sew some clues into the clothing, we can remember.
All right, Greta, always, always thinking 4 to 5 steps ahead.
So that's so interesting. That reminds me of something.
What?
I feel like it might be a little cosmic. I'm trying to make a memento joke.
I know.
If you say what, I can't do it. Though.
No, I thought of memento and I thought of tattoos, but we wouldn't.
We don't have any.
Not feasible. But we can make at least like a quick word or two. Not a lot, but, you know, something with needle and thread.
I was going to say, they spend the next 10 years making just tons of stuff in their needlework.
That's funny.
We invent the sewing machine.
Hildegard's got battle medic. Something tells me that they're
skilled with a needle and thread in a pinch.
Oh, you're a doctor. I mean, at that period, you'd have to know how to use a needle and thread.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm a doctor, not a seamstress.
I figure because the time period, most women would know at least a little embroidery.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, I'm not going to sit there and go, well, you don't have that skill.
Roll for stitching.
Okay, so several minutes later, Algot comes back and he says, here you are. What questions do you all have before you go back? I'm sure there's a lot.
Mr. Algot.
Actually, my last name's Fisk. I go by Algot's my regular name.
Oh, well, I was thinking maybe I could split the difference since we're familiar, but I...
No, that's fine. Okay. How can I help you?
Good sir. So you said troll magic affected your memory? Is that connected to us in any way, perhaps?
I believe it is. You all arrived in 1887. The society had all but crumbled at that point. There was a large amount of incursions of different Vaesen attacking our research facilities and our groups that were going out to learn more about them. At that point, the society was trying to find out why the Vaesen had become so angry with humanity. For a long time, there was a balance, and that balance has been lost. So then all of these deaths started to occur. People started getting killed. There was a lot of infighting inside of the political structure of the society. After its fall, Linnea Elfinklint decided to reach out to everyone. There was a horrible massacre that happened at one of the society locations. She survived, but it drove her half mad. She spends most of her time, at least back then, in the asylum. When you go through that door, you're going to find yourselves outside of that asylum at the very point where you were going to walk in and talk with her. Whether you do that is up to you. Maybe changing what we do will help the situation. I have no idea. After speaking with her, you went to the castle, and for the next several months, you did what every other member did. Searched for clues about Vaesen, helped people out who were having problems. There was a gentleman I remember who came in, and his wife had been kidnapped by Vaesen, but the police believed that he had done something terrible. So you all investigated that. I can't remember the outcome. That's the problem. I am tied to this castle. My belief is that I can't die until either whatever ritual these Vaesen are doing is completed, or you figure out a way to break it and set everything right. It's complicated, I understand.
So am I correct in thinking that we don't know when or how we continue to die? We just wind up here and we just are? Or is there a moment that you can pinpoint where things go very wrong?
The first time was at a party that was held to help the citizens of Uppsala understand what the point of the society was. There had been a lot of backlash. A lot of people were angry with the society and felt they were doing nefarious things. So we invited them into our home. We had several prominent people there, and they found you all in the library, dead from what looked like contusions to your heads. The second time, you all decided to try to avoid that very moment. We knew when it was coming up, so we didn't have the party. You avoided the room. but you still ended up being murdered separately in your rooms. And the people who were with you to help hopefully stave off whoever the killer was, they don't remember anything. So it was obviously some sort of magic to allow the assassins to get to you. It's always the same time. It's always at midnight on November 15th, 1888.
So what you're saying is we have to worry about the Vesen and we have to worry about people.
It's possible, yes. They could be in league with the Vesen. It's very possible.
Or detractors. Detractors who believe that we are doing some kind of occult.
Correct.
I see.
Elizabeth, you were going to say something?
The second time we died, was it the same contusions, as you said?
Ugh.
Yes. Yes.
Square holes.
Just about the head?
Yeah, just smacked in the head with some sort of blunt object.
So interesting how brutish and forceful that is. Vesen are usually much more tricky.
True. Though trolls and giants, some of them are more brutish than others, but they're huge. They wouldn't have fit inside the place.
Right. Or maybe there's a troll assassin school we haven't discovered yet.
Ugh, that's horrifying to think about. Could you imagine a troll in some kind of like black outfit, like just trying, you know, it's like I can
trying
see
to blend
you,
in.
Trying to blend in. It's like I can see you right there.
No, thank you.
Just T-posing in the corner.
You're sneaking with a great hammer. Like,
sir, you're not doing your job properly. I can see you.
Ignore me.
Exactly.
What should I sew into the clothing? I can't sew full sentences, so just some clues.
I will say I'm a bit concerned, in a sense, just because I believe that this might be the last time. If it's going around the clock, we've got the first one, which our corpses were desiccated, and then second, a bit more recent, and then... But no matter what, I think that this is the last time we're going to be completing the clock, those last four places. I think it has something to do with the gentleman and his wife. Was the wife a religious woman at all?
Very much so. One of the things that was thought is that religion was part of the problem, as well as the rapid industrialization of the area. That seemed to be an issue as well.
Did they have children?
They had 6 children, 3 of which did not make it.
Elizabeth looks at everybody else.
Had there been any reports of myling activity around the same time?
That's what the society originally thought, yes. Maybe they were switching out kids. Sometimes young mothers will be stolen to be wet nurses.
We saw.
And that was the premise that the society thought at the time, that that had happened. But the police didn't believe any of it.
When did this happen?
Not long after you all showed up. It was one of the first cases that you all worked on. He'll show up at the house a few days after you get there, after the other members of the society show up as well. I think there were 7 or 8 of you at the very beginning.
Did we find her?
I don't remember.
I think we found her. In our walkabout, so to speak. That woman was definitely not a fae, but she was feeding babies.
I think what we might have to do is, as soon as we get to wherever we're going to the asylum, do we know where he lives? Do we know where the family lives? I think we need to go straight there. We need maybe prevent this even from happening.
Yeah, I mean, you could go straight there. You didn't do that the last time, so... Like I said, any kind of changes that you make might be the key to breaking the cycle. I'm not sure what happens if you complete the circle and you die again. It's a very large ritual. That's all we know. So all I can do is wish you the best of luck. When you see me again, I'll be much younger and I won't remember any of this. So good luck.
Is there anything you'd like us to tell your younger self?
You know what? No. Let him live his life.
That's maturity.
Well, unless there's anything else you all want to ask, the door is waiting.
I guess you're staying here, chicken.
You can take the chicken with you if you want.
Have we done that before?
Have we taken the chicken before?
I seem to remember the chicken being with you the last time, but that's your choice. I don't know if the chicken helps or not.
I say we leave the chicken.
So we leave it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll save you the stress this time, little gallina.
So you gonna leave the chicken?
Yes. Oh, I just spoke Spanish in Sweden. Oops.
Hey, Europe, you know, you could learn some Spanish.
Spanish was in Europe at one point, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yes, true. I believe it did exist at that point.
Yeah, there was Spanish-speaking people in Europe, so I think we're okay.
Really?
All right, so all of you go through the door?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There is this incredibly bright flash, and you find yourself on a walkway with a cobblestone street behind you and tons of brick and mortar buildings surrounding in a large asylum in front of you. Just as Algot had said, I'm sure you look at each other and look at your hands and you see quickly that you're the age that you're supposed to be. The city around you is bustling. You can hear horses and carriages and people talking and probably a newsie somewhere screaming, you know, paper, paper, paper. And it is 1 or 2 o'clock, so the sun is at its peak. What's the plan?
Hildegard is ready to just go to that man's house and just see what's up with his wife.
I want to find out what she was doing.
That's the piece we don't know.
She might be responsible for the very genocide. We don't know.
As we're kind of walking and starting, Elizabeth definitely looks to be relieved being in this time and says, I'm not looking forward to those other loud noises. Anyway, so I have a lot of theories that are kind of are working out in the mind. If we're going straight there, do you think that maybe the wife is still, this is before the kidnapping?
We can only hope.
Yeah, our dear butler said that, the husband shows up a day or two, a few days later from this point. So we might, but I wouldn't count on it.
All right. Well, hopefully we can find out a few things.
All right. So you turn on your heel and you go, and you remember the address. Uppsala is encircled by forest for the most part, and just wild land not far from its borders. You get to the cottage. This is summertime. It's June of 1887, a full year and a half before your deaths. You notice when you get there, number one, everything is closed up, and there's just this horrible aura around the house itself. And you notice that the door is open just a little bit. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
This is kind of bad vibes. It takes him 2 days to come see us?
Yeah.
2 days to visit and ask for help? I have to say, if this was my abode, I would not have waited even half that long. This is abysmal.
And I certainly would have run screaming if I had this sense of foreboding about my own place. And Siv is kind of looking to see, just like in the dream, can she see through that door, the ajar door?
Yeah, there's a beam of sunlight that's lighting up the main living room of the small cottage. And you see a man on his knees. You can't make out everything, but it looks like he's sobbing.
And on the floor near the door, is there anything like those scratch marks and nails that were there in the dream?
No, but there does seem to be dark red, crimson spots leading all the way up to the door.
Is this the same cottage that we saw?
No, it is not.
Okay.
Can we tell if that trail of blood, did it start in the cabin or was something bleeding and went into the cabin? Like that kind of thing.
Do you get closer to the door?
I'm willing to, and since I'm the stealthiest.
Do you want a stealth up there?
I'll make a stealth. Or if Hildegard just wants to go, then.
I think we can just go.
Hildegard is a doctor, so Hildegard is like kind of like looking to the rest of you like,
Elizabeth will walk up.
You want to just like go in?
So
okay,
just so
let's walk in.
Okay.
Because in my mind, Hildegard seeing blood, that would be appropriate for her to be like, does anyone need medical assistance, right? Like she's thinking about
Okay. Just so you know, you wouldn't have to make a stealth roll for this particular situation, but all of you en masse go up to the front door, and the second you get to the opening, you can smell the blood, and you can feel the violence in the air. One of you just gently taps the door, and you see this man on his knees. He's got a white shirt. It's covered in blood. His face is covered in blood. And he is just saying why over and over and over again.
Excuse me here. Do you need any kind of assistance? We saw blood leading up to your door.
It's my wife. She was dragged away, and I grabbed at her to keep them. And you notice all the blood is dry. So this happened a while ago. This probably happened, you're guessing, at least 4 hours ago, if not longer. All of the blood is actually dry.
Okay, try to remain calm. This is a very sensitive situation, mine here. But who took her, and where did they seem to go? Do you need us to follow? Did you try to follow?
I tried to, but they hit me, and I woke up in a pool of her blood. I think she's dead.
Does there look to be enough blood for this person to be dead in this area? Like between him and what we saw outside in the room?
It's a coin flip. There's a lot of blood here, but she might still be alive.
Okay.
It's not a missing leg or something and tons of blood like that, but there's a good amount.
I think like Hildegard just sort of looks at him sobbing and looks at the rest of you.
My bedside manner is, it's good. It's not great. So perhaps one of you might want to console this man. I mean, death is something we live with. I don't know what to do with.
I'll talk to him.
I mean, it's quite a lot of tears. So
I'll talk to him.
Okay.
Sir, tell me a little bit about your wife. What's her name?
Her name is Margaret. My name is Ulrich. She had just had our sixth child. She had gotten up out of bed to go to the bassinet to feed the child. It was late. I don't know what time it was, but I saw a figure in the corner, something large. And then I heard Margaret start to scream. So I got out of bed very quickly, and I had on what I have on now. He's wearing basically night pajamas, the pajama, you know, thing. And she started getting pulled into the darkness. She literally threw the baby to me. She was trying to fight this thing off. And I quickly put the baby in the bassinet and I grabbed onto her legs because everything was in the darkness. Nothing seemed to penetrate it. And then suddenly she was ripped and all of this blood just oozed onto the floor. And I heard a scream, but as if she was far away.
When you say ripped, do you mean ripped out of your hands? Or that she was torn?
I meant ripped out of my hands. I had a hold of her leg, and I was pulling as hard as I could, and there was this incredibly hard jerk against me, and I fell backwards, and then the blood went everywhere. And then I passed out, and I woke up asleep in the puddle.
Sir, I don't mean to cause any further harm. I just have... where are your other children? And did she look like very pale and fair skin, long hair?
I start to describe the woman that we saw in the cabin.
Margaret had really light brown skin, dark eyes, and short hair.
Okay.
No, she's not fair skinned.
That's good.
I was waiting for him to also describe where his children were.
He goes, well, we have a room for the older ones and then the babies in the bassinet. Oh, God, I haven't checked on him. And he runs over to the bassinet and he starts to just wail and falls to his knees. But just as quickly, he jumps up, runs to the children's room, lets out this howl, and then faints and hits the ground.
Hildegard, maybe you should see if he might have concussed himself. I want to walk over and see what happened in the kids' room or in the bassinet. Is the bassinet in the same room we're in?
The bassinet's in the parents' room.
Hildegard, like, sighs and then takes a little vial of smelling salts out of her doctor bag.
Okay, so let's start with Siv first. Siv, you walk over to the bassinet and you find inside a baby created from twigs and ribbon and even some hay, with two button eyes and what looks to be dried out umbilical cord for a mouth.
Is this an identifiable type of, I almost said artifice, doll, I believe I should have said? Is this like a known vase and trickery?
That's the first thing that pops in your brain. You all are relatively new to the field, so you'd have to do some research in a proper library, but it does seem like some kind of almost doppelganger. Obviously, there are changelings or that they use, but this seems very strange. And Hildegard walks into the opposite side where the man had run in, where the children were supposed to be, and finds the same thing. There are three bunk beds, and the five children that are in there have all been replaced with effigies of straws and sticks tied together. The man's on the floor and you're able to wake him up. And he goes, What the hell is this? I don't understand. I gotta get the kids up. I gotta find their mother so that she can feed the baby and so we can get to work. And you can tell he's just
in shock.
In shock and losing the battle of reality.
I try and kind of start talking him back to where we are. And I say, are you and your wife religious?
Well, yes. Yes, we are.
Do you believe in Basin?
Fairies? No.
Yeah.
That's pagan nonsense. We live in a different world now. Things are changing.
You don't believe now?
So you're saying that some kind of supernatural creature did this?
It's entirely possible.
Who's going to believe that? What am I going to tell her family?
Hildegard, knowing that this is not their purview, this emotional stuff, I think starts to look around the home. Are there any signs of violence within the family? This man is the only person that's left out of his entire family. This creature thought to not just take babies, but older children as well. Obviously, that could mean, you know, they're trying to build some sort of mortal army, but also, is this punishment because he's awful?
Okay. Let's see. I feel like that needs a roll. Do you have investigation?
I do.
Can you give me an investigation roll? And if you have a talent that's linked to your investigation, usually it's a +2.
I do not, unfortunately.
Okay. Okay. And you need one success. So it's 1-6 out of all your dice.
I do not have any sixes.
You can push the roll if you want, but something bad might happen. And by might, will.
You know, I will push the roll.
Okay.
Hildegard does have a past history with changelings and children.
Before you roll, if you push it, you suffer a condition. If you're using logic, it's a mental condition. But at the same time, if you want to get help from someone, other players can help. So if you're investigating, maybe Elizabeth can help you look around as well.
Yes. Elizabeth has been writing down everything. There is a slight, I feel, though Elizabeth is a very emotional person and they understand like that sort of aspect, there is like this emotional detachment as she is writing down everything that is happening. And there's like multiple notes about, is this right? Is this right? And I think Elizabeth looks up as you're looking around Hildegard and says, sorry, closes the book and puts it away. Do you need help looking around?
I'm not trying to be, how you say, a downer, but I feel it is not a coincidence that this man is missing his entire family.
Oh no, I, coming in as well. I don't inherently think that, of course. I feel that there is definitely something that's missing, and even though we know that the father is going to come to us later, which we should probably let him know about everything to spur him on that way, there's definitely a reason for this. So I understand what you're doing. Let me help.
Steve is checking out the baby in the bassinet on the other side of the house. Greta can help with the roll if they like as well.
Can I roll observation to see if
I observe anything really unusual other than a man who's losing it.
Yeah, sure. That makes total sense. Go for it.
I did get a 6.
Excellent. What condition are you going to take?
Angry. This is feeling personal to Hildegard. And she's frustrated by the fact that this man is just whimpering and crying, not taking a more kind of like active stance in the disappearance of his children. Sort your life out. Your family's been taken.
Exactly.
Don't you have any skills?
Hello, taken.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing?
Slap. Come on.
You should just then describe the plot of Taken. It's like, okay, have you heard of a fox?
Come on.
It's a very particular set of skills.
Yeah, Hildegard recognizes that this is an emergency. Like, she's not, you know, completely heartless or anything.
Right. You want him to mama bear up, is what you're saying.
Like all your kids are gone, sir?
Yeah.
There's no time for crying. So crying and child kidnapping?
There's no crying in child kidnapping. Actually, there's probably quite a bit.
Maybe.
Maybe just a little. I think it's fair to have some emotional
treat.
Breakage. Jesus. No, it's just funny because it's like, come on, just get with it.
It just makes me think of the scene in Macbeth where Macduff's family has been murdered by Macbeth's men, and he gets the news and he's reacting, you know, and he's like breaking down, and the prince is like, okay, use that anger, let's go get Macbeth, and he's like, can you give me a minute to just get this out? We will go get Macbeth.
You can cry after he's murdered.
He's like, just give me a minute to grieve. Okay, just a moment.
I don't have time for your tears.
Well, see, this is why Hildegard has left him to Greta. Greta knows of these things.
Without the actual children here and without the actual mother here, it is hard to discern whether or not this house was a house of abuse or anything like that. But what you do find is underneath each of the beds are rosary beads without a string. And they are in a circle. They look like clock faces. And there are several beads under each one of these places, including the baby's bassinet.
I want to touch him, but I won't just do it. While I'm holding the doll, is there any sort of, we had the sense of foreboding and the essentially bad vibes.
You picked the doll up?
I was.
You were, I didn't hear that part. I thought you were just looking inside. You picked the doll up?
Yes.
All right. So you pick the doll up. How do you, no, not at all. How do you pick the doll up? Do you like, are you looking at it closely?
Yeah, first looking at it close enough to discern that the mouth was umbilical cord. And is it like a, this is maybe not important, but is it like a little slash of a line or is it a circle? Like,
it's a circle.
It's a cross section. It's like someone cut.
Tied up at like, it's like a piece of string tied at two ends. But then suddenly the doll shakes a little bit, it turns its head towards you and reaches out for you and says, Mama. And that's where we're going to end this episode.
Oh dear.
No.
Why not keep it up? It's baby.
No.
No more touching eggs. No more touching babies.
We have no baby zone.
Don't touch anything.
Damn.
Episode 3. We're retired.
No touch.
We're retired.
Yeah, that's how we prevent death, is we just never do this.
Just never do this. We nope out right real quick.
Goodbye.
I mean, you know, it's the best idea for everyone involved.
All right. Well, thank you all so much. I had no idea you were going to pick up the baby. I was like, oh, I wonder if they'll do that, and leave it to Saint to do it. It's perfect.
I spent so much time waffling the other episode, so I'm like, do something.
No.
Play with a chicken.
It's fine. I had a blast. Thank you all so much for playing. Thank you all so much for listening. Let's find out where these wonderful people are. Let's start with Piper.
Hi, everyone. You can find me on Twitter at Maddie Matihi. You can also find me on my Twitch channel, Matihi, where every other Saturday I am playing along with Candace. We are playing a game called What We Do in the Shallows, which is a 5e queer romantic pirate adventure. It is always a good time. Probably be seeing me in a few more places, but check out my Twitter if you would like to see and hear about the things that I'm doing.
Hello, everyone. I'm Candace. You can find me at the Candace Marie on Twitter and Blue Sky, at Candace the Magnificent everywhere else. You can hear more of me in the Emmy nominated podcast, Otherworld Hollywood. Hopefully, by the time you listen to this, we will be on our way to a win. It's an honor just to be nominated, though, really. You can also hear me on Beyond the Outer, which is the 12-Sided Stories Patreon-exclusive podcast featuring the Mothership System, where I play a super creepy android named Vaughn. And if you want to hear more of me, just check out my socials. Pretty much all over the place, as Piper said. I do What We Do in the Shallows. I should be on some programming on Chaotic Wholesome Presents soon. That's going to be pretty exciting, so please just keep your eyes peeled.
Hello, I'm Saint or Saint Spider, and you can find me on Twitter technically at Saint Spider TV. That's SaintSpiderTV. Unfortunately, I haven't been doing much TV stuff. Hanging out with spiders, though. My house is full of them. And you can hear me on other 12-Sided Stories podcasts. Please look into their beautiful back catalog for amazing things. And yeah, hopefully you'll see me in some future stuff, too.
Hey, I'm Michelle. And you can find me on the socials at Michulhu. That's M-I-C-H-U-L-H-U. You can also find my music and Wes's amazing sound effects if you subscribe to the Plate Mail Games catalog through BattleBards. And you can also hear Wes and I on Friday nights and see us, actually see our faces on Twitch, Friday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, whatever time in your time zone. And come on in, give us a visit. We just chit-chat for about an hour.
And I'm Wes Otis. Thank you so much for listening. You can find me at Plate Mail Games on most of the socials. You can find the show at 12-Sided Stories, the number 12 and then Side Stories on all the different socials. We also have our own website that you can check out. It's 12-Sided Stories, all spelled out, all one word, .com, where you can find links and different shows going on and all the different cast we've had and everything else. We are super excited. By the time this comes out, I think we might be very close to knowing whether we won that Emmy mentioned or not, but I hope so. Being nominated is awesome, but winning is also awesome. I'll say that. They're both very awesome things. You know, we'll see what happens. If you want to help out the show, join our Discord and have conversations with us. Give us shout outs on your favorite platforms. Reviews help a ton because the algorithm is all knowing. And finally, join us on Patreon, where we have hundreds of episodes that you can't get anywhere else, including Beyond the Outer and Agents Dossier, lots of mini episodes for the other world shows. Yeah, so come check that out. Thank you so much for listening, and we will speak with you very soon on the next Hidden North. Bye, everybody.